The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to the Delighted Customers Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Slayton, and I am so glad you're here. I empower leaders to delight their customers. I talk to guests with a wide range of expertise who share meaningful insights, wisdom, and practical tips that you can use immediately. I'm excited to announce the Trusted Guide Roadmap Masterclass for CX leaders who struggle with executive buy-in and are ready to go beyond CX fundamentals. This masterclass gives you proven frameworks, and it takes you through a step-by-step, four-step model that will move you past the frustration of not getting your work done. It's unique because it's live, interpersonal, hands-on, and we give you tools and templates to help you build your CX roadmap. To learn more, visit empoweredcx.com. The next masterclass starts on February 27th, so don't wait. Well, I am so excited to have my guest, Darren Hood, on the show today. Darren is a fellow faculty member at Michigan State University in the Masters of Science program for Customer Experience Management, and that is where we met. He is a fellow podcaster, and he is a user experience UX expert, and we're going to talk about UX today with Darren's help. Darren, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Mark. I appreciate it. Excited about the session.
Absolutely. So you're teaching people in the master's program all about UX, and these are people in the customer experience management program. So I'm so glad that we have a course on that to round out people's, you know, knowledge on that topic. But before we get into UX, could you share with the audience a little bit about your run up into the world of customer experience management in general, and then what you're doing now?
Well, with regard to customer experience management, I think I'm a bit of an outlier when it comes to UX, because I've been practicing UX from a customer experience perspective since about 2013, 2014. Yeah. When I was first introduced to CX, I just absolutely fell in love with the fact that CX, I call it the bookends of experience design, because CX is really coming into play when a person first enters into that important experience funnel, and then all the way running into what we call UX, then past UX and back toward the end of the funnel that cycles people back into, or the end of the journey, I should say, back into the purchasing funnel. So when I came into knowledge of that, it really excited me. I really understood the logic of it. And I began to realize that UX is actually a subset of CX, where we're like cousins, where we're or siblings, or however you want to put it, we're connected. People come up with a lot of different terms to describe that connection, but we're all under that umbrella of experience design. UX is usually involved with where people have their hands on something or they're interacting with something, but customer experience is concerned with that much more. And I think it's, we're so close, we're so related, we're so dependent on each other that I eventually came up with, I don't think we talked about this before, there's an equation that I like to present to people sometimes when I'm talking about experience design. And I say that CX plus UX equals BX. So what a company puts into their CX, what a company puts into their UX, generates BX, which is a naturally generated perception of the brand and all that goodwill, and whether or not somebody's going to be loyal. It's not just CX, it's everything. So if a company invests in CX, but they don't invest in UX, BX is going to suffer. If somebody invests in the other way around, vice versa, then the BX is still going to suffer. So I embrace that mindset, and I always now do my UX work knowing that there's a CX factor that's related to it. And I try to play into that to support that. And Sometimes I have the opportunity to work with CX professionals in my UX travel, and sometimes I don't. It's some companies are on the bandwagon, some are not. But that's where my stance is with regard to CX today. I understand its importance and its necessity.
Okay. And so for our listeners, and if you're in the world of customer experience management, you probably came through a number of different paths, right? A lot of different paths lead up to the top of the mountain. But UX, less common. And so we as a profession, we probably know less about that than many other aspects of CX. And maybe if people are familiar with voice of the customer and metrics and maybe even some financial stuff and little bit, not a lot, but a little bit on change management. But UX is also a science, it's a discipline.
Yes.
I wonder if we can get granular for a minute for those who are a little less familiar and help us with the definition. Because when I think of user experience, okay, so it's sort of like the class I'm teaching, as you know, is customer relationship management. And people automatically label that as like a CRM software application like Salesforce. And that is really very, very small percentage of what we're teaching in the course. I imagine UX. So when I think of UX, I do think of people sitting in front of a computer screen going to buy something and checking out and making that experience easier. But then part of me, if I step back and say, like recently had not recently, but a few months ago, we had a woman on the show who works for a company called Woom, WOOM. It's based on the sound of a bicycle for children. And they took this idea of a bicycle and redesigned it to make it like lighter weight, easier to access, more durable, and they call it Woom. And so they really looked at the way kids use bicycles and redesigned the thing based on what I would call the user experience. So help us understand when we say UX, what really do we mean by that?
That's a fantastic example that you just gave there, Mark. It's UX. You'll hear a lot of definitions out there.
Okay.
They will usually be stereotypical. I have to say this first. A lot of people think that UX is UI. They think that it has to do with how things look and feel. I can't tell you how many times I've experienced, and other people have told me they've experienced, coming into a meeting with stakeholders and they just say, "We'll just make this look better." They think that that's all we do. That is actually a very small percentage of what we do, an extremely small percentage of what we do. We're the beneath the skin people. If you look at the metaphor of the body, we take care of everything beneath the skin. The visual designers take care of things at the presentation layer. What we see, where Mark and I are looking at each other in this Zoom window, we see each other's presentation layer, if you will. We can't see what's beneath the surface. That's where UX lives, beneath the surface, the capillaries, the sinews, the tendons, the bones. That's what UX people do. So UX is thought to be this visual thing, but it actually, when you really look at it, it has to do with, as in my course, we finally identified, I had an illustration that talks about what UX really is. And it really comprised of, at last count, we have 250 methods, methodologies, techniques, and deliverables, all of which are driven to accomplish one thing. And it is to find the sweet spot between business needs, user needs, and any constraints that we have to deal with in order to execute. So UX is really an umbrella term. It is not making things look good. It is, I'm going to use these different methods and techniques to make sure that we can find that sweet spot, picture a Venn diagram, the sweet spot between the user needs, the business needs, and the constraints, and we optimize things based on that perspective. We want things to be as easy as possible for the users, while at the same time driving as much of an advantage for the business as we can. And we use as many of those techniques and such as we can to accomplish that.
So, if I'm a business owner or a C-level person, you hit on a couple of them, but I want to get to kind of the benefits so people can jump into, okay, this is why I need this. So one of them is you mentioned sort of the employee experience of making their job easier, making it even fun, and doing that obviously by studying. the processes and the outcomes desired. But talk to us more about what other benefits can businesses gain from this.
One of the biggest benefits that a company gains from opting into and understanding, that's part of it, user experience. And I'll start at the very top. There was an organization by the name of Design Management Institute. They did a study two different times. I believe the studies were conducted, if I remember correctly, 3 years apart. And the purpose of the study was to understand the competitive advantage that was gained through being design-led, basically putting user experience, making that a key part of your business strategy. They found out that companies like Coca-Cola, Apple, Whirlpool, a whole host of others, these companies outperform the competition. In one of the reports, outperform the competition according to Standard and Poor's by 228%. Simply because they were design-led. Being design-led just gives a competitive advantage that simply cannot be mimicked. It cannot, there's nothing else that will touch it. The reports that IBM and NASA conducted back in the early to mid 2000s found that for every dollar you invest in user experience, mind you, it needs to be done correctly. If people just have people in seats and they're paying lip service, they don't get the ROI. If they invest a dollar, one study said they would get up to $100 in return for every dollar invested. The other one said that the company could get up to $250 in return for every dollar invested. So these are the types of languages that people in business understand. And so if you invest, it's going to pay off. Do you really want to be a top company in your field? Then invest in UX, but you can't just go through the motions. You have to bring in, this is the opposite of what's happening for the most part today. You invest in putting real UX people in charge of your operations who are hiring real UX people to do the work, and then make sure that we have a seat at the table so that we can be involved in decision making and things of that nature, so we can drive what's called the UX maturity level. If the organization doesn't understand UX, if they don't value UX, if they commoditize UX, things of that nature, then the UX maturity level will be less. It won't be optimal. And then the ROI now is going to be shot. And what happens a lot of times is that when companies don't really upskill properly when it comes to UX, they're not going to see the ROI. Then they eventually come back and say, well, we're not really getting value out of that. So we're just going to lay those people off. We're going to get rid of it. But really, they did it because they didn't take the proper steps. And a lot of companies jumped on board with UX, but they just went through the motions and they never bothered to understand what UX really was and what it offered. So they just turned around and now you see there's a lot of layoffs in the UX world today
So
for
I
that.
was going to ask you about that, Darren, about what you think some of the biggest mistakes are. And what I heard you say, you keep using the word do it right. I imagine there's also, you mentioned the word educating, educating the team members, at educating the employees about what it is. Also, I heard you talk indirectly about the importance of it being part of the culture.
Yes, it has to be. It has to be.
So what are the biggest mistakes that prevent it from being implemented, do you think?
The biggest mistakes, and this is not anybody's fault. It is what it is. People get excited when they heard about the ROI. Prior to that, those ROI reports getting out, most of the, we didn't even call it UX yet, but most of the UX roles were in creative agencies. And corporations would bring in the agencies to handle their UX work. So they didn't have to worry about the UX maturity level, and they didn't have to worry about making any decisions. They didn't have to worry about HR getting involved or any of that because the agency was doing it. When people said, I want my piece of that pie. I want my piece of that for every dollar you invest. I want part of that. So then they just appointed somebody to do it. And that was the first mistake. So it, because they were hands off. And then they appointed somebody and that person didn't know and didn't care. And then that person got other people involved and they didn't know and they didn't care. So there has to be a genuine involvement that comes into play. And if there's a genuine involvement and people take the time to execute, I mean, it's just standard business. You don't get involved with something and just go through the motions and that's going to play out well. It never works out if people don't engage from a deliberate perspective, focused on what, how can we achieve excellence in this environment? They do it with everything else, but with UX, that just didn't happen. So that's where companies have to sort of right the ship by getting the right people in place. The executives will never have as much time as we might like them to get involved, but they need to know enough to be able to check boxes and give approvals and things of that nature, where it's confident, and they can have a conscious element there that they can account for what's going on, and they don't have to turn around 3 years later, 5 years later, 10 years later with regret, because you can lay the proper foundation up front. And then other companies have done it. Other companies can do it too. Coca-Cola got it done. Apple got it done. Other companies have gotten it done. Whirlpool got it done. So it can be done. And I just wish more companies would do that. And that's part of what I spend my time doing in the wild, is trying to address this. I'm actually speaking at a conference in October about how to triage UX and get us back on the right path.
Well, that's nice. I think there's some of those common threads would be in the same conference for CX as well,
Yes, here. Yes.
So you just talked about getting the ship right and putting things in motion the right way and getting it set up correctly. What would be some of the first steps that you think an organization should take to do CX, do UX right?
One of the things that folks could do, I taught a master class for Interaction Design Foundation on the topic of managing personal UX maturity. And where do you stand? What do you know? What do you not know? It's almost like an exercise in emotional intelligence, but it's for UX, because one of the major factors associated with emotional intelligence is self-awareness. So anything that you do, if you're going to excel, you have to be self-aware. Otherwise, you're just going through the motions. You get a participation trophy, perhaps, and you move on. But if you want to really get it done right, I'm addicted. I want to be in the top echelon of whatever I touch. So I want to be in that 200, outperforming by 228%. I want to be with those people. So that means that if you want to be there, which I think a lot of people, when you talk to them, everybody wants to be there, at least when they hear the concept. The question is, will they opt in? So you need to understand what you know. This is part of what I talk about in that workshop. What do you know? What do you not know? Make it a point. Identify the things that you do know. Establish a strategy to maintain that path. Look at the things that you don't know, whether it's something you don't know very, very well or you don't know at all. You're going to have to spend time deliberately engaging to level up. And when more people start doing that on an individual basis and on the organizational level, now we're talking about some progress and everybody benefits. It's funny how we can do something and the entire business world would benefit. If everybody would learn, for example, that UX is not UI, that would solve a lot of problems right now. We all woke up in the morning and everybody got it. That's a lot of problems that would be eradicated. So, of course, that's not going to happen. So we have to do it by addressing it, and we, one person at a time, we address it and we try to educate people and help them to understand. So education is a big part of it. Commitment to that education is another part. And then the willingness to, and having the discipline to maintain based on what we learned, that takes us a long way.
Can you share an illustration for us of an example of a UX improvement? And I don't mean to put you on the spot here,
Oh, sure. Right.
but where you took something and just really improved the user experience for a company.
Oh, yeah. The first example that comes to mind, so I'll run with it. I was doing work for, and I'm going to call a name out on this one, if that's okay. Is it okay to call out a company name? I was working for Rocket Mortgage at the time. It was called Quicken Loans. And of course, a lot of people think that's a mortgage company. It's actually a technology company. And there's at least, when I was there, there was just under 105 companies under that umbrella. One of them, Fathead. And I think a lot of people know who Fathead is, where you get a poster of your favorite athletes or send in a picture of somebody in your family and create a cutout and then throw it up on a wall. And this is what they're known for. This is what they do. And so I was called into Fathead because You can either buy, and hey, I mean, go Lions. It's Lions time right now for us here in the Detroit area. So you could get a picture of Jared Goff and put it up on your wall, or Sam LaPorta and put it up on your wall. Or, as mentioned, you could take a picture of a family member that you're trying to honor, because maybe you've got a person who is an older person, and you're celebrating their 90th birthday. So you get a picture of them, you put them up on the wall, and we're having this great thing. So we send this picture in to or you go to the Fathead site, I should say, and you're supposed to upload the picture that you want for this custom Fathead decal. And so you go to upload it. This is what was happening. And the process was just ghastly. It was not intuitive. People didn't know where they were in the process. They weren't getting feedback. My memory serves me correctly. They weren't getting feedback when they were going through certain steps. And so people would get to a certain point, and there's something in the world of UX that we call the annoyance threshold. People would reach the annoyance threshold. I know a lot of people can relate to that.
I
Usually,
know my wife sometimes gets that with me.
and so fortunately, she didn't, you didn't say X, so she didn't get to the point where she was done. People were getting to
Right.
the annoyance threshold, and then they were abandoning the process. And the volume of people that were abandoning the process was off the charts.
Oh boy.
Enter Darren. I was dispatched to go and just walk across the street. They were across the street there, downtown. Have them give me a complete download of what was going on. Because when you do UX, the first thing you have to do is understand the design problem or the task or the goals. You get all of the requirements first and got a full download. Give me all the information that's going on with this. And if you can show it to me, show it to me. Help me to understand current state. So we understood what the current state was. And a lot of times, people in my position, they would want to go out and then do some research. But it turned out that in this particular case, it was blatantly obvious to me, because I used something that we call heuristics. And heuristics are proven principles, best practices, common conventions, things that we already know work before we even do any research. And a lot of times it's said that you can find up to 90% of what's wrong with any design just by applying heuristics. But you can never, it never finds everything. So there's always a gap, and you can do research to find out the same. Well, I was able to tell, because of my experience and because of my knowledge, and I really love heuristics, and I know how much it can save you, how much it can save the company. Who wanted to wait 5 weeks to find out? We already have all this abandonment, and the profit from this aspect of the site is just it's nosediving. We need to get this done. I was able to fix this, Mark, just through doing a heuristic analysis, and then going back, walking them through my heuristic analysis, and then giving recommendations, because my heuristic analysis consisted of findings, recommendations, and then I included examples. This is what it would look like if you were to implement my recommendations. This is actually how everything would be resolved if you would. I think that if we just make these changes, I believe you're going to be in good shape. And it was so easy. This happened in 2 days, 2, 3 days. I came back with these recommendations. So I saved them a ton of money. And when they implemented it, it worked. And the numbers started to skyrocket immediately. It spiked immediately. So we were able to fix this problem, which to me came across as low-hanging fruit. We were able to fix this low-hanging fruit issue very simply, very easily, just by way of heuristic analysis, something that a lot of folks don't know about and don't use today. So I make sure to teach it in my class. The first thing I expose my class to at Michigan State is heuristic analysis, make sure that they know. So that's a big example for me. It was huge, a huge win. And everybody, we just went and we celebrated. We were good to go.
Now, Darren, are you the one that actually makes the changes to the system, or is it their people and you kind of lay out the plan?
I'd say no asterisk. Usually, the UX person on average is going to be the person who is going to provide the recommendations and the documentation, the reference points, so somebody will know what to do and know exactly what to do, but we hand it off to someone else usually. If there's somebody in a startup, yeah, you might have to take off one hat, put on another one. They might have to, but the standard mode of operation is that somebody else is going to take care of doing the actual work.
Okay, got it. All right, so I have one more question because the world keeps changing. And the world of generative AI is here, and we've got things like Second World and games. We didn't even talk about the whole gaming industry and UX and but tell me about what's next. What do you see as next in the world of UX?
To me, it is there's a certain part of UX that's always going to be status quo. And I think a lot of people who are in UX and are interested in UX, if they haven't been in UX for a long time, if they have, they already know what I'm about to say. If they're not, then they might be a little surprised by what I'm about to say. But because of this status quo component, which is it, and that resides where the fundamentals of the discipline are, such as heuristics. A lot of people are not only are a lot of people in UX today not well grounded in fundamentals, but some people literally get hostile if you try to present and propose that they learn more about the fundamental. They will get hostile with you. But that's where, if you're grounded in the fundamentals, because the discipline, if you know the fundamentals, is very pervasive, you can move from website to interactive TV. From interactive TV to email, from email to a cart rolling around in the auto repair bay, from there to you just go anywhere because UX principles, when you know them, are applicable to anything. My room that I'm sitting in right now is UX'd. I UX'd this room. It doesn't help that I'm addicted to ISO principles from a project I worked on back in the day. I brought that stuff home, but I want to UX everything. I want everything to be as efficient and easy to use as possible. I want things to be intuitive. I want things to be simple. I want to facilitate my ability to excel in everything I do. And in order to do that, everything around me needs to be optimal. So that's what we do. And when we ground ourselves as UX professionals in fundamentals, we afford ourselves with the ability to do that. So that said, when the iPhone came on the scene, it floored a bunch of us. But because back then it was very common for everybody to be grounded in fundamentals, we just shifted. And we started designing for apps, and then we started designing for the a couple years later, we're designing for the responsive experiences. And I established best practices at two agencies associated with mobile design. But you just shifted. We were already doing it. So you shifted. So now here comes AI. Fast forward to 2024. Here comes AI. It's something that needs to be vetted out. And there's some fantastic articles, and I share them all the time on LinkedIn. And I'll always say, stay grounded. Here's a great article from MIT. I told you a year ago it wasn't going to take all of our jobs. MIT said it's not. Here's the data. You didn't want to listen to me. Maybe you're listening to MIT. Here's another one about AI. 86% of what they're producing through AI is incorrect. You need to take it with a grain of salt. I told you a year ago, but you didn't listen to me. So here's a report from somebody else. So it's we need to, I think AI is going to be great one day. It will never replace the true professional who knows their stuff because they're simple. We UX is an infinite science that has finite science embedded into it. So when I give recommendations, actually a lot of times people don't get it. It's not until we test my recommendations and get data that we transition from infinite science to finite science. And when they see the results, now they get it. But they don't usually understand, especially if you're very intuitive, and the more experienced UXers are more intuitive. So we see things that other people just don't see. So until we do testing, they don't get it. And AI is the same way. There's certain things because I can pivot, AI can't. It's AI is grounded in finite science, and there's too much of UX that's infinite science that has to pivot on a dime that AI simply cannot do, and it will never be able to empathize, which is at the core of what we do. So if a person grounds himself in the fundamentals. And just know that there will always be another technology. There will always be emerging technologies. When it comes up, make it a point. There's a free course at IBM on AI. Go and take the free course at IBM on AI. Keep up with it, run parallel with it, but I don't have to jump on the train. I'm going to run parallel to it so I can know enough. And when the time comes that I need to pivot because of AI, I'll be in a position to do it. So I'm not going to reject it, but I'm also not going to jump on board and put on the rose-colored glasses and take my critical thinking hat off. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, I'm going to try to put a big bow around what we were just talking about, what you just shared, and before I ask you one last question, but before I get there, so I see so many parallels here. You mentioned UX is a subset of CX, and for those, as I think about, as we're I'm thinking out loud right now, but I'm thinking about the life cycle of a customer. And really the way that we as CX professionals begin to approach our and our roles and then where UX is coming in to play a part in that whole customer experience journey. I think about number one is, I mean, depending on how far you want to go back, but in the cycle, but somehow understanding what the customers are experiencing now or what the desired experience is. So you have to understand what it is and then how are they feeling about, like, what do they think about? Is good, bad, and different? You know, what do they like? What do they not like? What do they wish? And then once you figure that out, then you say, okay, these are some insights. I have all this in data to analyze. Right. If you're doing it right, you're collecting data of different kinds, and that may be some place where AI can help out, get more data quicker and cheaper. And then you've got to turn those insights into actionable insights to make change. And some of those changes require experience design, where you need to either redesign the experience. And that's typically not a place where sort of your general CX generalist has an aptitude. Got to bring in some experts to help with that part. We got to change this to make it better for the customer.
Well said.
And then, right, and then we implement it and then we measure again and see if the customers like it. But that whole experience design piece, that UX piece is something that most CX, unless you came from that world, you don't have experience. So we're sort of like generalists. I am, you're not, but I in that regard, I'm a generalist, and I would need someone like to bring someone like you in to help make the change, and or at least advise, serve as a trusted advisor for the change.
Consultant.
Yeah, consultant. Yeah.
Which I
So
love consulting.
was that a reasonable
Yes,
ribbon?
it is. Yeah, that's very well stated. It's perfectly said. That's the perfect world. That would be the happy path. And that's where you have an overlap between CX and UX and how we help one another. I need to empathize with what you're trying to do, lend support, get in, get out, provide that support so that you can validate what's going on. And what you're talking about in my world will be called mental models. The more we need to do, especially if we're benchmarking is so valuable. I don't want to wait for a project to find out what my users are thinking. I want to be ahead of the game. So the more proactive we are, the more we can get done. And it helps you to be in control of managing the overall experience instead of being an order taker, which UXers are not. We don't want to do something because the HIPPO, the highest paid person in the organization, decided something. We want to be a someone who's already taking the pulse and knows it and be able to provide those types of insights without them telling us what to do. That's where if we're operating at our peak efficiency, that's where we need to be. So yeah, will we need their input on that sometimes? Yeah, absolutely. But we need to at least in some way, form, or fashion, between CX and UX, be looking at a point of concern, identifying something. We should be the doctors in that situation. We are and we are keeping up on vitals. We're like the proverbial wearable, if you will. I've got on three wearables right now. I'm big on data. So we can be this ring that's giving you data. We could be the Apple Watch that's bringing you data. We could be this Whoop band that I have on that's bringing in data. I actually have four. I'm not wearing the fourth one because I'm getting all of this data. I actually do have on a fourth one. I forgot. I won't talk about that. But we're the people that are bringing this data in, and then something comes up. I love situation where someone mentions that they're concerned about or wondering about something. And right there at the point of inquiry, the point of curiosity, the experienced design professional, be it a CX or a UXer, can stand up and say, you know what? I have just the thing. You might be interested. And wow, how that impacts them, because I've heard that CX has perception issues just like UX does.
Oh, yeah.
And so, but if we can be the leaders that we are, it's in our core.
Yeah.
And if we can be that and be more proactive and take our discipline, take that bull by the horns and drive it, it's waiting to be driven. And frankly, too many of us are too responsive. So because we're responding to everything, we're not staying ahead. We're not seen as leaders. I think we're leaders. We should be leaders. I've done a talk on that before. Everything that we yield is leadership oriented. And so, but if we wait on everybody else to see it, then we're waiting to be valued and we're delaying our own incubation, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Well, just thank you so much for providing some, shining some light on what UX is and what it isn't, what some of the mistakes are, what are some of the obstacles, best first steps, and how the intersection occurs between CX and UX. One last question for you. What advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
this might be funny. Stay in school, dude.
Did you not stay in school?
Finish the degree. Yeah. No, I didn't. I didn't. And I developed a habit of leaving school for 10 years at a time. And now I've been in school since 2003. I had two masters and I'm a doctoral candidate now. I should have finished as a long time ago.
You're just stretching it out.
So it has nothing to do with what we talked about, but that's what I would tell my, but without getting into the extra personal stuff, that's what I would tell my 20-year-old selves, because that's when I left. I was 20.
Yeah. Well, that's great advice. And I learned so much from you. It's an honor and privilege to be on the same team as you in the faculty at MSU.
Same here. Thank you. Thank you. And thanks for the opportunity to share. I love sharing, as you know. So,
yeah. Hey, Darren, if people want to get a hold of you, what would be the best way?
Most people that want to connect with me, they do so on LinkedIn. I'm very live on social media. According to an app called Metricool, I have a social media reach of over 15 million people. So my stuff gets out there. It covers some ground. But most people interact with me on LinkedIn. I've got a blog on Medium. You can find it at uxuncensored.medium.com. I have a channel on YouTube and my podcast. I don't know if you knew this. We didn't talk about this. My podcast automatically publishes to YouTube every week. So there are some people who partake of my podcast on YouTube, and that data doesn't come in through our CX of M radio stuff. I also have the YouTube channel. I have a UX Uncensored YouTube channel, the podcast, The World of UX with Darren Hood podcast.
World of UX.
Yeah, World of UX.
Got it.
There's a website if you want to, like, quick and dirty, get access to what's going on with the podcast. And I'm planning on expanding that site in the not-too-distant future and provide some categorizations. I got to get that out. So that different interviews that I've done, series, things like that, it'll be easier to go through and actually partake of the episodes right there on the site. It's worldoux.com. So if you go there, also, if you just, I don't know where I want to hear the podcast, if you go to that page, there's 10 different places you can get to the podcast. So you can just pick one and go. So, but that's where you can find me out in the wild.
And we'll have that, some of those links on the show notes as well.
Sure thing.
Darren, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yes, sir. Thank you again. Yeah, had a blast.
Well, thanks for listening to the Delighted Customers podcast. I want to ask you to do two things. If you have enjoyed this episode or any of my other ones, hit subscribe or follow. I've got a lot of other great guests that are coming up and a lot of other great content, and I don't want you to miss anything. You can find any links or references on this show in the show notes, and you can find those on my website at empoweredcx.com.